at the monster elemental presumably, but more rather than just saying, well, it's just this formula, we can say this is relevant, this is somewhat of a tangent, but it's relevant to the idea of so if you have a notion of pure state, this is some definition by
so have we started the discussion?
No. Any of the things that we wrote on the boards. Yeah.
What's his name?
This was
Ullmann.
You
know that name? I'll show you this.
Should I write things on the board again? Or what is so what are the suggestions?
You could project it. Is it the idea to discuss those points or to gather more points?
You could do either. Whatever you think is more useful. So let's see what is left to discuss. We have we could talk about. I mean, one idea was that are there other directions like in like Big Bang or black holes where we can do something we call sets. We haven't talked. So that was on the agenda. we could talk about ideas we discussed before, but is there something?
What about the thing we were talking about just at the end of yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
As being something causal sets related to the Big Bang or just after.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get the right tilt and almost scale invariance thing out from the tree structure. I mean, maybe wouldn't be best thing for everyone to talk about right now.
Okay, so let's just start from here. I guess we did talk about it at the end regarding Big Bang. So what does everybody think? So how can we get Big Bang in the sense that we now understand it cosmologically from causal sets? Should we even talk about that, even though we don't know how to get it at all yet?
But you mean Big Bang? You don't mean just the Big Bang. I mean, in these population models, in these sequential growth models, you have bouncing universes and so on, right? So you have this idea. But you're saying that, that was what Raphael was talking about too, is that these don't evolve. I mean, one doesn't know that they actually lapse into a manifold-like phase. So whether that dynamics is only
I think that's actually one of the things is manifold-like.
The structure of the early part of that evolution has certain properties, which is what Raphael was discussing yesterday, perhaps after you left. Tree-like structure of that early, that early universe phase.
That one works better anyway.
Yeah.
That's clearer. It's actually very hard to see.
So I think that picture, so let's say we just talked about the Big Bang. So the way we think about the Big Bang is that there's time and there's the space. So basically the idea is that there is some space-like hypersurface anti-chain, should I say? So you have
maximal anti-chain. It's actually a maximal anti-chain.
So what is the maximal anti-chain?
You can't add any other points to it and keep it as an anti-chain.
Closest you can get to a Cauchy hypersurface.
Right, maximal anti-chain. Sounds like a name for a band or something.
Yeah, you.
Right. What did you suggest? I'm sure someone would love it.
This is like a very non-social band. Maximally unrelated.
So it seems like all the creative things you can think about is the name of a band. Like, do you remember Echoes from the Abyss that we did with the Echoes? So that's apparently the name of a band.
That was
So I'm sure this could be a label.
And Lehman also had his REM fan copy who's.
Yeah.
Based on which they had some.
They had something, I forgot about it. Yeah, but yeah. Okay. So the thing is, right, so you have this space-time that you have a causal set that looks like a sprinkling of a four-dimensional space-time. 3 plus 1D space. Space-time. But then what we know from the Big Bang cosmology is that it ends at some point. And that's, I guess, the maximal anti-chain. So there is you have a boundary when beyond which this doesn't exist. So your causal set has, so I don't know whether the best way to think about this is that you just, the causal set, just you just have a random sprinkling and it just stops. Probably that's not the right way to think about it because we know, the space-time density, or I should say, the scale factor goes to zero here. So there must be some pattern in the distribution of causal sets. Something should be happening to them as you approach this Big Bang singularity. And presumably then at some point you just run out of causal sets.
Presumably when you get to a Planckian density or temperature or something, you should stop there. I don't think you want to go down to the... In fact, you could sprinkle them.
You could have sprinkled an FRW. You could
have FRW with this all the way up to the singularity. You could do that, of course.
Hmm. Right. So you could just take an FRW space time and a sprinkle it. Of course, that doesn't gain you much. Well, I don't know. So the question is now, can we, so what do we want from a theory of Big Bang? Of course, it's not FRW. We want, for example, perturbations that come out of it. Or other things possibly, maybe dark matter. So I guess actually I can write down, there would be dark matter. There is BBN, but I suppose I don't think BBN, we shouldn't really write it down because I think that we understand it from a standard physics.
That presumably is.
Except for what we discussed, I guess it's ever present lambda. So that's kind of the interface, I suppose, between the theory of Big Bang. So it would be a BBN. There is baryogenesis. But in some sense, the thing that must be most promising is. Perturbations.
Right? Yes.
Primordial perturbations.
And then there's the very fact that it is an FRW universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the very fact that you can make a list of what is peculiar about the initial state if you don't assume inflation. I mean, inflation was, in some sense, introduced to.
Right, so
let's go back to a pre-inflationary mindset.
Right.
You don't mean pre-inflation, but pre-inflationary mindset.
Before
thinking
we were
about
in human
sense.
Human sense,
pre-inflationary.
In human sense, yeah, pre.
So
pre-inflationary theory mindset, not pre-inflation.
So there is basically a flat. It's the flatness and I guess the horizon problem. Flatness.
People named these problems, but we should, yeah, so. And I always call them puzzles. But anyway, flatness and horizon.
And there is a monopole, which I guess you could, I don't know if you want to put FRW as another one, because at some level, I mean, for causal set, that's also a challenge.
Well, I would, instead of, yeah, flatness means really
smooth.
I mean, it doesn't have to be literally flat, but it has to be.
It should be very near flat in terms of, I mean,
in terms of Planck length, it should be, Planck units, it
yeah.
should be very nearly flat.
So it should be very flat. So,
but let's say what those mean, because I think it's worth imagining what. Imagining what this early state of the cosmos would have to be like
right.
to give rise to what we have now. without some intervening exponential expansion or something like that. And the, and that's what those problems are, really. They're just statements that the early initial conditions, let's say, just at the Planck time or just after the Planck time, let's say, are in some sense involve a lot of very large numbers or small numbers. So there's a kind of naturality problem if you are bothered by large numbers. So you could just say those large numbers, that's just how it was. There's nothing wrong with that. But it would be more satisfying if we could give some explanation of why those things were.
But I mean, you could say the same thing about the entire, I mean, physical universe, like just say, okay, that's just the way it is. You don't have to, you don't need to have laws to explain things. You could say everything happens in some particular way, and that's. So in a sense, I think what happens is.
No, but this is a different thing because in our theories now, which is someday we may hope to overcome, there's a distinction between the equations of motion and the initial condition.
That's right.
And the theory, as we have the theory, doesn't give us anything about the initial condition. So you're asking for either an earlier time, and then there would be some earlier initial conditions, and then that could push the problem back, maybe. And maybe they would be natural, and they wouldn't have large numbers built into them, and they would naturally evolve towards what we have now. That would be the kind of idea.
But
that
I kind of disagree with that, because I don't think it's... And the large number thing is not necessarily an issue. The issue is how many free parameters. I mean, do you get more predictions? The number of predictions compared to the number of free parameters in the theory. And indeed, I think I agree that traditionally in physics we make predictions for given initial conditions. But really, what you have is that you have something that you know, and can you make a statement about things that you don't know? Now, whether they came before or after is kind of beside the point.
That's a point of view, but my point of view is different. So I think we're interested in causes. You're saying that all we're interested in is correlations.
Yeah.
So the more correlations that we can sort of build into our theory, then the fewer free parameters we'll have left, the fewer things we'll have to put in ad hoc by hand. So if you predict the past from the future, so now it depends what your personal wishes.
But it could also be, I mean, special. Like you know what's happening here based on that. You can predict what's here, even though, I mean, there is no causal relationship between them in the traditional sense. It's just that we observe here, and based on this, we can say what is here, and then we go and observe it and see whether it's actually what
you can put that in. Yes, you can. It's a question of compressing the data or something like that.
That's right.
But if you want to explain it, so to some of us, maybe it's a traditional, maybe it's, well, you're more of a positivist, I'm more of a materialist or something not a positivist. I mean, they're different forces.
I should be negativist if it's.
Maybe so. Maybe we shouldn't call
it. I'm fine to be a positivist.
More optimistic person than ever. So, so it depends what you want. But for some of us, we want an explanation or something that we could call an understanding. And for me, an understanding is more than just a bunch of rules of correlation. But I mean, that's a
right.
But we can leave that aside. We can say. We can just try and pose the problem, that's all I was saying. What is it that was characteristically special about the early universe?
Mm-hmm.
And now we can dispute whether or not we should be bothered by it or not.
Yeah.
If you're not bothered by it, then no one would have ever thought of inflation, for example. So some people were bothered by these things. But the question, all I'm saying is, to set the stage, what are these things?
Yeah, what are these? What was
the early universe like?
Right.
In order to give rise to what we see now, and it goes. These are code names for that. But what does flatness really mean? I think what it really means, I think, is that there's a large number. If you would just take what we have now and run the Einstein equations backward, you would, of course, hit a singularity. But then you would ask, what was it just sort of immediately after the singularity? What were the conditions? And what would you see? What would you see? A Planckian temperature. And therefore, Planckian density. And therefore, scalar curvature would also be Planckian in nature. And yet, if you just look at the spatial scalar curvature, it's, I don't know what the number is, like 10 to the minus 30 or something compared to the order unity. So you have a very, very anisotropic space-time. It's very highly curved in the temporal direction, and it's much less curved in the spatial direction. And that looks peculiar.
When you say it's anisotropic?
In space-time.
Because in this time it
lasts. Anisotropy in the same way that you normally use it. I mean,
spatially anisotropic. In fact, that's another thing. It's very spatially isotropic.
Yes.
And so why should, that's another feature of it.
Because it's very Lorentz violating principle.
But that's okay.
But I'm saying it's not, when I say anisotropic, that's what I mean in the Lorentz sense.
But it's more than all the time.
But is it? But is that? Yeah, that anisotropy is not something what is it? Why is that?
Is that peculiar?
Or
you can find it peculiar or not. But.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that the fact that even though the space is very large. The growth of the space is very, very rapid.
That's the statement.
That's the standard cosmology, and you're saying even that should be explained by some.
I'm just saying that's what people would like to explain.
Right. I mean, this is what the feature of transitive percolation does for you, right?
Flattens problem. It's very hard to quantify, and people have tried. More recently, it's not really a problem. I know some people argue.
It's a feature. I mean, it's there. Whether or not it's a problem is another issue.
I think the question is, right, so what you really want, I guess, in the causal set language is that you have your causal set, and it's kind of bounded by a maximal anti-chain or something. I guess it's the buzzword is basically. So I guess to be precise, anti-chain are a bunch of causal sets.
Space-like related.
But of course, I mean, causal set language, just means that there's no causal relationship, and you cannot add anything else.
The mathematicians call it incomparable.
Incomparable.
That could be a bad name to
incomparable. But basically, it's just a bunch of causal sets. That are causal set points, which they are not causally connected, and you cannot add anymore.
Right.
Now, and I guess basically it's a maximal anti-chain with nothing to their past. Okay. Is that
so?
What
it's also minimal.
Those would be the minimal. That'd be the minimal.
Why would you want that to be the case?
Because it's meant to.
Because
I'm just saying right now that it's the bound of where it is, what you'd call 3+1. FRW or something.
So is it minimal or maximal then?
Minimal, maximal anti-chain.
Okay, so it's minimal and maximal.
No.
I would say a maximal anti-chain.
Okay,
it's just the minimal, but it's just the minimal element of the causal set.
Yeah.
That would also be a maximal.
If you're actually saying there the
okay,
ones right at the past infinity, if you're thinking of them as sort of the past most elements, then you don't even have to.
Okay, so this is an important meeting because we have to decide on this name. That might actually affect the future of causal sets. So you guys have to carefully define.
Both are
The idea is somehow
but
that we're.
This one is better, more marketable, I guess.
Oh.
So why is it that this. So this is directed to Rafael. Why are you thinking of? So somehow this is going to be a summary of the whatever the earlier stuff has happened. Why is there this maximal anti-chain?
I didn't say anything about a maximal anti-chain. Yeah, I just said about.
No, okay. So are you saying it's?
I was just trying to enumerate what are the Characteristic features of the
early. This is Linus's idea, that should have somewhat something like a summary of its past or something.
Well, I don't know. We have to hear. I'm not sure what.
That of course
not.
But so that's it. So minimal is just saying that there's nothing to the past, right?
Yes.
You don't need to say minimal layer or minimal elements.
And maximal, it means that. So what does maximal mean?
In this sense, that you can't add any more elements to the set and have it still be an anti-chain.
Okay.
I mean, the statement is you need another equal.
Different terminology.
Minimal element equals maximum is a maximal anti-chain.
See, a single minimal.
No. The whole you can just say minimal elements. They will themselves form a.
Okay, minimal elements are.
Is enough because. And another word for maximal, which I find much more useful, is inextendable.
Yes, you could say inextendable.
It's inextendable.
So you're saying that all minimal.
There's no confusion about time. And
the set of minimal elements is a maximal anti-chain.
It's an inextendable anti-chain.
Inextendable anti-chain.
Elements are maximal anti-chain.
Equal, yeah.
But it is a maximal.
It's a subset of all, yes.
But you said something else. It's a.
Sumati wanted to say instead of maximal.
I find maximal and minimal related to the causality.
Okay.
So and it's used in that sense as well. So
right.
I would just say inextendable. Something you can't add.
For
maximal. Instead of maximal, just say
inextendable. Maximal, you prefer inextendable. Yeah.
And now we've really done what you said. We've solved the problem.
This is more marketable.
Okay.
You solved it very well.
Does it improve our brand or make our brand worse?
Yeah.
Less marketable.
This is it. So
you're saying now take this anti-chain and then you're going to say that what is it required to be in order to give you the.
So we need some rules for the properties of this, I guess. Minimal elements or inextendable anti-chain. Minimal inextendable anti-chain.
So just to sort of be annoying about it, the fact that there is no Cauchy hypersurface, meaningful sense of summarizing your past in this it'll have to be much more than this, I think.
You want to thicken it.
It'll have to be some subcausal set, which does contain all the structure. That subcausal set, rather than this, just this thing, it'll have to be some thickened area, thickened causal set, some subcausal set, which is in itself minimal, but it has enough structure in it, has enough correlation to contain, useful information.
Right.
So.
Right.
Just to say, it won't have this very minimalistic structure. It'll have more.
Yeah,
what one would be looking for as initial conditions.
I mean, I guess if you just have an anti-chain itself, you cannot do much with it because there's no causal
information.
There's
no information on it.
Yeah, there's no information. So you actually need to know, have things. You need something as you approach it, not just on it, right?
So this is what we call thickening of the anti-chain, and then you can construct geometric information on it based on that.
You
can actually construct a metric based on the thickening on the anti-chain.
That's what you need.
So you can do that. You can construct a distance function, and then you can ask, what are the properties of that distance function that are required for you to generate the...
So my question, in this sequential, classical sequential growth, which is, I guess, I think for those of you who haven't heard about it, because probably, you guys know more, some of you know much more about it than I do. So you start with an element, and then you add an element, and with some probability, you connect it to all the previous elements, and then you keep just adding that, right? But you always add a start with a single element, right?
Not necessarily. You don't. Well, you start with a single element, but the next element might be unrelated to it.
Or might or might not.
And if it's not related, then you might have started just as well with that one. So it's.
So here's a question: could you start just with,
you could make
a minimal and extendable anti-chain, which is basically a large number of elements instead of a single one.
You could.
So basically then that would be your Big Bang. So you start with this zero dimension, which is, this could be infinite or finite, I suppose. And then if you kind of do this game, so has anybody tried this one?
Doing what?
So instead of starting with one element, you start with, I don't know, 1,000 elements and then non-touching, and then do this classical sequential, basically add elements with some probability to connect it to this, and then so on.
It should be the same, I mean, I don't know. Oh, you're saying put in that as an initial condition?
Put that as an initial condition. Anyone tried that?
But after some time, it might become the same sort of thing again.
That's what one, that's my sort of intuitive sense.
Because
if you've already put in the probability for certain things, you've already put to one.
No, the answer is no.
Get rid of the stem exists.
That's
the question is, once you have, so it's actually an interesting question, I think.
It's because
sort of sequential growth,
it
like
might be related to the flatness problem in the sense that, yeah, I mean, if you say a flat universe, it means it's really infinite. It's what you start from.
I think flatness is more along the, but that's part of it, not really infinite. But it could be, you could have a flat, you know, torus.
You could have a torus, no, but I guess the question is, I guess really finite, it's not flatness. But so is it, are we dealing with the finite or infinite? And
I think
you
should do it with the finite. I think it's just, it would make sense to do it with the finite.
But actually, cosmologically, what we know is that basically everything, as far as we can say, there is no end to the universe. So, yeah, it seems that basically the universe actually just continues.
Right.
Well beyond our light curve. Of course, we never know, but it seems that everything is consistent, everything is continuing. So it seems that then it makes
sense.
Put
it on a really large torus and it wouldn't matter. Right?
It could be a very large torus. But then it makes sense if you wanted to generate it from, classical sequential growth. So you got to pick. Basically, there are two different regimes. There is a regime where the time is. Basically, there's a time where these different parts never see each other, never get time to get in contact with each other, which seems to be the regime we reach within it. And there would be a regime where, basically, if you wait long enough, everything is in causal contact with everything. And I think basically the way that classical sequential growth is done is you start with a single element, so everybody is in causal contact with everyone, essentially. Which is kind of opposite to the opposite.
Well, it doesn't have, no, see, because if you start with, actually, you start in some sense with no elements, but then there's, after that, there's one.
That's, everyone comes from one element, right?
But and not everyone has that element as an ancestor.
Yeah.
That's a stronger condition, right?
So you could generate this from a classical sequential growth as a complete anti-chain. It would be, in transitive percolation, it would be Q,
Q to the power of
like, n into n minus 1, right?
The probability of getting
The probability of getting this is something. Now, you're setting that equal to 1. That will force your, I mean, which is not going to work. And obviously, if you set that equal to 1, that means Q is equal to 1. So, Q to the sum of
I thought you were going to say a condition on the fact that you
so,
did
So, yeah,
it.
You have to do a conditioning,
condition,
and one doesn't normally do that.
I think there might be a confusion. So, if you did, say, percolation, which is the simplest sequential growth model, it's more or less guaranteed not to give you anything like space time, even with this initial condition. But just to illustrate, if you did that, there's a free parameter.
What is percolation?
Oh, it's kind of what you were describing. So each new element connects to all the earlier elements independently with a fixed probability.
Okay.
That's the simplest CSG model.
Okay.
But there are much more.
Okay, that's just a red line, I see. Classical sequential.
That's only one possible set of coupling constants. So in that one, if your P is very small, then the next element is very unlikely to be related to the first element and so on. So you will actually generate a large anti-chain for a long time, depending on how small P is.
Yeah.
And then after a while, then you'll start connecting up. So that's all I wanted to. But that's not what I'm advocating. So
the nice thing about this picture is that you're building the homogeneity into the setup. So
that's not true necessarily, because it depends on the subsequent growth. So the dynamics has to be something
that maintains
uniformity. And in the sequential growth dynamics, I don't know one that would, unless you did something like a tree dynamics, which would pretty much maintain very simple dynamics.
Your setup is symmetric under any permutation of these initial elements.
Yes.
So your dynamics will have to respect that over time.
No, but the dynamics also respect that. It's just a probabilistic dynamics.
Yeah.
So there might be some
spontaneous
racking of the symmetry. Yes. But at least at the dynamics.
The dynamics is democratic, but the realization may be completely not, and typical realizations will not be
the
point.
Spontaneous.
Right, and it will be, right.
It's hard to tell.
I think it will be, unless the dynamics is chosen very, very...
With all the CSG.
I think typically it will
be. But I think this is an exercise.
It's a good problem to explore a little bit, I think.
And basically, there are two basic scales: the number of elements you start with,
and how long you evolve for.
And MIA, I guess, minimal and extendable language. And then basically, the number of how many times you add them. What do you call that?
The time.
The time, I guess.
Yeah.
Proper time.
Time. So I guess.
And the number of elements is time.
In the number of elements, which is basically the number of elements. And I would guess maybe we basically two different regimes where this is smaller than this and this is bigger than this, or maybe some powers of this. But basically, there would be some notion of horizon that might emerge or may not. I mean, ideally, there would be some notion of horizon that would emerge, right? So. But of course, that requires some notion of locality as well, which I guess we don't know.
Yeah, that's what's likely to.
That's a hard thing to tune, I think. It's really.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, at some level, the point is that there would be some islands that would connect with each other.
You can simulate this even if it's hard to think about analytically. I think simulating this is not difficult at all, even with transitive population.
The way you set it up, there's no notion of locality in the initial.
Slice
or anti-chain. But you could do what Sumati was saying. You could thicken it a little bit and start with something like that. You could like sprinkle a little. A little strip out of space-time, and then you would have an initially built-in notion of locality, and in fact geometry, as she was saying, and then you could see how long it can last, whether or not.
That's a good point. So you start off with something that's actually a sprinkling into, say, FRW,
yeah.
slice of FRW,
second
or sitter, or whatever you like. And then thicken slice, and then you just use transitive population to grow it.
Don't use transitive population.
It's very
to...
hard, yeah.
That's
so, one of the other possible dynamics. And,
yeah,
that's a very nice, yeah, that's actually not hard to do.
So other question is, of course, this is classical if you just keep adding elements
and
some probability.
And also because we have a notion of the geometry. You can actually look specifically at the uniform, the metric on this induced spatial metric, and see how that's growing
and
how it evolves and whether it retains any characters, maintains a character.
So I want to kind of move on. So the wrap up. course, I mean, there are a lot of interesting problems that we can try to tackle, but in terms of what has been done so far in causal set simulations, it seems that this would be one new direction to try, in particular in terms of understanding Big Bang. So you want to start with this?
You can actually leave out in the extendable in your box, because if it's minimal, then it's automatically an extendable.
Right. So start with a bar. So let's put it this way. So you want to start with a large anti-chain aka Big Bang.
If you're just talking about finite things, you can even talk about quantum growth without any problem.
You mean using complex parameters?
Yeah, just some complex version
that's
of
true.
This.
That's true. Maybe that's
and the thing, but the question, of course, is then, what does it mean for a likely? So you have to then give a sort of an effective way of defining. It's more like a transition amplitude, right? So you've got started off with one particular thing. You could construct this.
You couldn't do it by simulation, so it would be very inefficient.
Maybe
right?
Not. Yeah. So you could
so
just
the
do
advantage
it.
Of the classical one is you can.
Classical ones you can
simulate them.
And the quantum one you wouldn't be able to do that, but.
You can
do
the transition amplitude.
Well, I mean, there's some potential ideas. But the thing is that there you would actually then look at. You could calculate quote-unquote transition probabilities to the extent that they're meaningful in these systems. You could try to calculate that and
what
then
is
try to
transition probability?
No,
amplitude, you meant amplitude.
Amplitude and from there.
Transitioning from what to what?
So this your one slice to another slice in a finite, in a finite time.
So are you saying that but I mean it seems that it's not clear that's an undefined. So
in this finite case you can always make it up, right? In the finite element causal set, if you've already decided that this is the initial and you want a particular final, you can always do a transition.
The question is that the right language for the causal set? Because it seems that maybe a different way is that you just have a wave function for different causal sets. So
that would be less of a problem. There would be more of a problem.
You just have psi of c for different causal sets. You would have a so you don't have the entire history.
Yeah, but you would. So the right thing to do is to use a measure, and whatever your decoherence functional. But from that, you could calculate. I'm just saying that this is something you can set up in a finite causal set. The issues are always with infinite causal sets. But if we can be very pragmatic about it and write down something for a finite causal set, it's possible to do.
So what do you want to set up in a causal set? You need transition amplitude is what you want.
Because if you're going to ask the question, I guess the physical question you want to ask is starting off with a spatial hypersurface with a certain character. What if you do a particular dynamics on it after a certain time, whether you're the last. So now you say you evolve it, then you get the future most anti-chain and you thicken it in a certain way, and you can ask, does that homogeneity or isotropy or whatever that you started off with, is it maintained by your dynamics?
Yes, right.
So that's the kind of thing you could actually set up an entire, that problem.
Right.
So I think, yeah, so it's actually, because we struggle with looking at this in the case of, infinite element causal sets, but our universe is finite and these are finite,
is there a quantum version of quantum sequential growth? How would that work?
There have been some attempts.
So you might have that.
Yeah, so I can tell you a little bit about it. So the idea is that you basically replace all your transition probabilities with amplitudes. Roughly speaking, this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
But what you want to do then is to construct in the case of this infinite case or whatever, whichever you're trying to construct a quantum measure space. So when you try to do it in a finite time, and that's all your system is, there's no problem because you can write down any decoherence functional you want. If you start off with a Markovian process, then you can construct a measure on the space and so on. And that will tell you basically everything about the path integral.
So can you do this on a computer or not?
So I think that to do it with large enough n, it will be very hard.
Like,
with
that
quantum sequential growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once
yeah,
you get
so,
to like six elements or something. There's just so many different graphs that you could have grown.
Okay.
That there's just too many amplitudes to specify.
But there's not much like Monte Carlo.
You can't Monte Carlo it because of the fact that it's an imaginary, there's a phase.
Mm.
I mean, that's why we do in the Monte Carlo simulations, you just do stat mech, right?
Mm.
You don't want to do that here. You could do that here as well. I mean, I don't see any reason not to, but I mean, just as something, right? Some particular calculation, but ideally you'd like it to be but yeah, so quantum sequential growth would just be something where instead of each thing being valued in the reals, you value it in the complex.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And you can construct a measure, but that measure, the vector measures, which are could be of any dimension that you like, and so on. So.
I mean, I guess
and
I
there's
think...
a whole framework there. The question is how to can we try to apply it here and calculate something. That may be hard.
So I guess this is, you have an action. I guess it's that bit across the darker action.
Yeah, so classically that would be the sort of thing.
So, no, but it's not
semi-classically.
You could, I mean, any causal set I draw, or any, I guess I can start with my anti-chain, and any kind of additional points I add, I can compute an action for it.
Yes.
And I guess the pattern integral is somehow exponential of those actions. So what?
So that's what we do, right? I mean, and
but
you construct a partition function, but then you have to deal with the phases. And the only way we know how to actually calculate anything is analytic continuation.
There's a conceptual difference as well in terms of how you would want to use that action. If you compared it to continuum GR, you have your starting spatial geometry and a final spatial geometry, and then you think about summing over things in between. Whereas this is more like a growth model. You want to specify phases.
No, so he's asking for the other case as well. So that's what I mean. In the growth model, you don't use the action, but if you want to use the action, you'd use part some of the history. So there's two different ways of doing dynamics, and I think that's what he's asking.
But okay, so it's something, it would be good. The simplest thing, I guess, would be the class or something, but it would be an interesting, I guess, start.
Yeah, I think even the classical ones
really
is actually, it's simulated fairly easily, and then to see, I mean, some suspicion is that most of the dynamics will give you things that if you started off, again, you can ask transition probability, right? Start off with something, a thickened hypersurface with this nice homogeneous isotropic thing, and then you do this, and then you look at the final most anti-chain and it's thickening, and then you say, well, does it look anything like the one you started off with? And I think typically you find that it doesn't. This definition of typicality is very clear. Problem is that when you come to the quantum case, we don't even know what it means to be typical. Or...
No, I think at some level it's guaranteed to work, because what's happened is that the point is that the notion of locality emerges in a sense that in a finite time, only a finite number of these guys would be connected to each other. And so you're going to have a bunch of islands, and then if you say the ones that are connected, they're local to each other. So that's just, the locality emerges out of the process of connecting some of these to each other. And of course, if you have a finite time, you're not going to connect everything to everything. You're just going to have...
I mean, one of the things that you have that has to be emergent also, so even if you can construct a distance function or whatever at the end of the day, that object, that thickened thing, may not embed into a space-time.
Well, that's not...
And that's even harder, but I'm saying even then, So the one of the features would be
that would be more ambitious. So it's a bit, there
even
is
to
no
get out
there.
Even to get out a distance function. So this distance function, for example, is something that these islands do show up, right? I mean, initially, when you, if you don't thicken enough, you have these islands, you have this thing that we started to term asymptotic silence for whatever X, Y, Z reason. But you have islands, and then they sort of connect up in the continuum, this is. They connect up, and then you can write this distance between any two points. I mean, the question is whether whatever amount, the same amount of thickening that you do at the end, you know, the
mm-hmm.
backward thickening, will give you things that are actually connected or not. It's not clear to me that they would,
okay.
And why they should. I mean, partly because we don't know, we don't, yeah. I mean, the only way to do it is to actually simulate it. I think it's very hard to know what.
Yeah, could be analytic. Okay, so I think I'm going to move on because I think we spent a lot of time on this, and I guess this is one of our problems.
It's a very nice question.
So I guess the next maybe 10, 20 minutes, maybe I'm going to address this.
Tell me what you want to go, because I might want to.
I want to talk about that hopefully. That was another thing.
Okay. So before you do that, see, I mean, you wanted to start with sort of the early universe and go forward.
Yeah.
But the other thing that you might hope the causal sense to do is tell you what was before that. You know,
that was not before.
Well, by construction, you had nothing before.
Yeah.
But you started with quite a lot of elements.
Yeah.
So why were they all born to be all, unrelated to each other and so on, and, but the specific, so my, in a lot of models there is something before, this is just another phase of expansion in a cyclical kind of, I think you probably had left by the time we discussed this yesterday.
I do have recollection and mentioned it at some point,
I just want to raise a fairly concrete question, which is, one of the things you would hope to reproduce if there was something before this was the correlations, right? The primordial fluctuations.
See, but that could have still come from here.
It could come from here, absolutely. But it could also come from something earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to understand what exactly we need to get. And I found out that I won't go through the other thing because it would take the rest of the time. There's some sort of idea of a tree phase, tree in the grass theory sense, that preceded this, and we were trying to make some arguments about what could you in some natural way, by numerology roughly, get scale invariant fluctuations, and would they have a red tilt or a blue tilt? And the nice thing is, if we didn't make a mistake, is that you would get a red tilt if you make a certain model of the tree. But anyway.
Okay, do you want to explain?
I don't want to explain that, but I want to ask a question,
okay.
Which is related to that. What are the fluctuations in? Are they the fluctuation in this zeta parameter? And is it true that the Laplacian of a zeta parameter is a density, or mass density, or is it more complicated?
It's
three-dimensional curvature.
Yeah, it's basically the same as omega k.
Well, zeta is the same as.
No, the Laplacian.
The Laplacian, okay.
So it's a density.
It's a local, Laplacian of zeta is a local
spatial
density.
A local curvature density. But and what relation does it have to, ultimately, if to over density of matter, or to delta rho over rho?
Well, that's it would. I mean, I think that when things become superizing, then the Laplacian of zeta would be overdensity. I mean, it's superizing because it's a bit of a gauge dependent thing, so zeta itself could be delta over rho in one gauge, in other gauges, it would be Laplacian of zeta delta over. When I'm superizing the scales, it's Laplacian of zeta.
So in some gauge zeta itself is?
On superhorizon scales, yeah. So the superhorizon scale is gauge dependent. The density is not, zeta is usually defined in the gauge invariant plane, but then depending on the gauge, it might be zeta or Laplacian of zeta or some combination, which is delta rho.
But sub horizon,
it's always Laplacian.
It's always the Laplacian. But here we're sort of superheroizing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I noticed the following thing which confused me, so that's why I want to ask about it. But just to motivate it, I wanted to say we by some numerology, got almost scale, we could get sort of scale invariant with
Maybe we should go through that now. We can talk about that, or maybe the next session then, since we don't really have a set agenda.
Okay.
So you want to talk about the numerology?
Okay. Or someone else. But, okay, but
should I erase this? You could use that blackboard
one if you want. It's okay.
Yeah.
But
I
can use. But I just want to ask a question first, because I something I figured out that I was always been confused about something. First of all, what is it, if we talk in terms of zeta, what kind of correlation function do we need?
The power law.
It's a power law, but it's nearly a log.
It's
nearly a log. So let's assume it's a log difference.
Okay.
Then, the peculiar thing is, if I take the Laplacian, you get a sign change. So, or how can I say this? If we assume that zeta, it's a question of the sign of the log that's confusing.
Okay.
If we assume that, if we want to assume correlation for the Laplacian, which is positive and falls off towards zero, I assume that that's what we want, right? We want a positive correlation, not a negative, not an anti-correlation.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you have to have an anti.
Actually, no, it's a bit confused. I don't think it's obvious. Correlation function, what it does is weird. Yeah. I don't even know if it's been defined.
For
zeta itself?
No, for both. Well, let's start with the Laplace.
Okay, Laplace, I think, has positive correlation.
That's what I meant. For that, you want positive.
Yeah, I think.
So then it looks like for zeta itself, you want negative correlation. That's the peculiar thing. So I felt kind of confused.
But
is that correct?
Let's just write it down. But it does help if we use a tilt. So here's the convention. The convention is KQ times P zeta of K over 2 pi squared. This is what we have as one to call. This is the thing as a scaling minus A over K over omni naught minus 1 to 1. Where A is roughly equal to minus 9, another number K by number, and NS is 0.96.
Now, that just means this is a small negative number.
This is a small negative number. That's, so this
let's
is
just call it minus epsilon.
It's minus epsilon, where epsilon is roughly 0.03. So this as epsilon is ns minus 1 minus ns, approximately minus 0.03.
So now you're interested in correlation function of zeta or?
Yeah. Okay. So it's the zeta of x, zeta of y. Or let's say x minus y is r. So this is related to d3k over 2 pi. Something is happening. The ik dot r. P zeta, which is now, if I ignore factors of order 1, which I guess I can, so it would be A over K cubed, K to the minus epsilon, this is proportional to this, and that's it, right? So, now, you're wondering whether this is positive or negative, right?
This is positive, right?
A is positive, right? Because the power spectrum is supposed to be positive. vast company. So you get something like integral, I guess you could write this because d3k and k here, you have like d ln of k, if you want, e to the minus epsilon ln of k, plus I k dot r, yes. That's the way to write, one way to write it down, I guess. You do have an infrared divergence. You have a regulator somehow. That's the problem, is zeta itself is not an observable, so it's so exactly what this means is it's kind of weird. But let's say if you have a minimum, you have a k minimum to infinity, then what you end up with is so you're going to be basically cut off either with this oscillatory thing or with this. Right. So how does this work? So if
I think it's too naive because it neglects the infrared divergence, but if we didn't worry about that, we could just count powers for dimensions here and have to be, it'll just be R to some power.
Right.
Which is, so this is like 1 over R to the K, to the minus epsilon. So that would suggest it's R to the epsilon, but it's not. It's not actually telling us the sign, but I may be wrong also because of the neglect of this cutoff.
So I mean, if we want to do this integral, so this is a, and you just said this is a.
This is an exponential. Can you do this?
I want to just treat this as a cutoff.
Oh, ignore that.
Yeah. So the integral would be basically from k mean to 1/r, roughly.
Okay.
Or whatever. So then you end up with 1/ε is equal to minus epsilon log of 1/r minus e to the minus epsilon log of k mean. I didn't really have to write it as a log, so I guess it's just it's just k to the minus epsilon, right? So, well, I mean, it's just 1/ε times.
This is the integral of dx e to the minus epsilon x.
Right, I'm just trying to get the units right here. But I think this would be just k not r. To the power of epsilon maybe minus k mean over k naught to the power of minus minus epsilon. So that's, I think this is the answer. If you want to minus epsilon here, it would be r over k.
No, I don't
mind. K naught r. Okay.
No, it's fine to have
a plus. No, but the point is that this is a positive, right? This is positive. Everything is positive here. So, I mean, if you treat it as a cutoff,
everything
is positive. Of course, in reality, this is a sinc function, but I mean, what it does is that it basically cuts off a positive function. So this should be positive. Now, I don't know whether I get the positive sign there, but it should be positive.
Okay, no, let's do it again. Okay, no, to the epsilon minus k min.
Right.
K min. To the epsilon. So which is bigger, k naught r or k naught? R has to be greater than
be less.
It does look negative to me.
It looks negative, though.
Because what happens is basic event came in, approaches, no, but unless there's a minus sign.
I think isn't there a minus sign?
There could be a minus
coming
sign.
From this.
Okay, so I think there's a minus sign. Yeah.
Okay, so this is similar to what
I was expecting.
So basically, the variable, this is a constant, so the variable term is when we come to take this k naught r the epsilon minus some whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a 1 over, the whole thing was a 1 over epsilon?
Yeah, that's a 1 over epsilon.
If this is right, yeah.
But it should be positive. Well, right? There was.
Did I lose the minus sign?
It should be positive.
Oh, I have it the other way around. Yes.
So for a small r's, yeah, that's right. So basically, what happens is at large r's, these two cancel each other because the minimum and maximum approach each other. But at a small r's, it should be positive. So this one goes to zero. So that you just get a constant.
So that's what I always thought it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Except I was, in my own mind, I just wrote log of r over log of sort of capital R max or whatever.
Mm-hmm. R max over r?
R max over r.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's positive. It has a similar behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Although it's not analytically equivalent, maybe that makes a difference. But when I came to take the Laplacian of this, I got a negative correlate, so I was worried.
The Laplacian of that?
Yeah. So
why do you want to take the Laplacian of that?
This is the Zener correlate, right?
Yeah.
So you said the Laplacian.
So what is the Laplacian of
Zener? So we want, so the Laplacian of Zener, okay, now we want the correlator of the Laplacian.
But you have to take then Laplacian twice.
That's right, I really have to take it twice.
Right.
So I had to take it twice. Yeah. So when I took it twice, I got a negative answer. That looked very peculiar.
But how did you know what zeta was? Yeah, maybe I'm confused, because you know the form of the correlation function for the zeta, x, and y, but you don't know the form for...
No, but the Laplace, you can take it back, because basically this is just d2n by dx2, and then d2 by dy2, so...
Oh, right.
So, and this is a function of x minus y. So you can just take the Laplacian twice, and that's that. I don't know.
I mean, one of the Laplacians should go here, one should go here. That introduces a minus sign squared, so it doesn't matter which side you take the Laplacian.
Right.
So in the end, you just take twice the Laplacian.
But I mean, the other way to do it is multiply it by k to the fourth here, right? And then it's clear you're going to get a positive number. So I don't know what theory you've done. So if you just multiply this by k to the fourth, this is just a convergent integral. Right. And it's positive. But I mean, the positive in the sense that we think it's just a cutoff at 1 over r, then.
I think it's
high negative, it's true. Right. I mean, it's like a sinusoidal, it's a sinc function. When you do the angular integral, it's really sine of kr over kr. But I don't think, it doesn't change the sign. So. I mean, it does have oscillations, but the integral, I think, is positive. We could try it, but I'm pretty sure it's positive.
Yeah, okay, we can. It's not very hard to do this. If you use this. Approximation.
There is a catch that the correlation function, its integral should be zero. So it should be negative somewhere. So there is this.
That's true.
Unless there is a singularity. Yeah.
There is a singularity.
The singularity somewhere, where is it?
Yeah. Short distance. Well, maybe not enough.
Because of the sign kills. So okay, I should go back to this, but I think the parallel is always tricky because something either blows up with the small scale or larger scale.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, the parallel obviously is integral is not zero. So maybe we should take a break now, but I think this is something we should discuss after, because I think we lost most people
yeah.
already. So.